You are listening to Omnus Protocol. I am Charles, also known as Omnus, and I'm here with Danny, Rockstar Modesto. What's going on, my brother?
Nothing much. Finally back from Elvion. Had a great time. My feet are so tired. I was walking 70 steps every day.
Dude, you helped on Friday, which was like beyond valuable. And then after all of your games, you were still like packing up and, you know, you made my life and Tyson's life and Lex's life. You know, you were literally a rock star.
Yeah, I was just trying to, you know, make sure things went smoothly, things could, you know, be improved upon, got improved upon, and that everyone's life was better, you know.
For sure. Well, let's start with the bad news, and I know I'm not the only person, but I have come back and I got COVID. I was feeling totally fine on Tuesday, and then Wednesday morning at like 3 a.m., I woke up and I was like, oh God, this sucks. But thankfully, it's not affecting my voice too much. So at least I get a little recording going on.
Yeah, that's unfortunate for everyone who got it, right?
Yeah. I escaped last year. Last year, and the weird thing was, I went and did more like dinners with a bunch of people at big restaurants and such. And I was way more chill in the evenings this year. Like Friday night, I was just back in my room with my feet up, just chilling. But I know I'm not the only one. So just go get checked. This happens at big cons. So
yeah, especially when you're in the thousands of people, right?
Yeah, for sure. Well, overall, Danny, I'm really happy with how LVO went. You know, I'm happy when rounds fire on time. I'm happy with all the different people I got to see. It was cool having a top four that was different players than either of the prior years of LVO, so just new blood, you know, challenging themselves and pushing themselves. What about you? What are your overall LVO thoughts?
I like seeing the amount of players that were there that were LVO was like the first big event like yeah. they've ever been to, period.
There was
like that was a lot of what I was hearing, right? And just talking to people randomly, I was like, oh, every month, like, no, they've been to like nothing before.
Yeah, I was surprised how much I heard that. But, you know, we all hit that point, right, where you want to go to something and you just got to pick something, right? And I think for a lot of people, just a flight to Vegas is pretty reasonable.
Yeah. And it's also the time of year is pretty open. Most calendars, something's really going on in January.
Yep, for sure. Well, Danny, where do you want to start with all this? I feel like there's a million things that we could potentially talk about.
Yeah, there's so many like amazing moments to talk about, and so many matches and so many people and stuff. And so like I just wanted to reminisce for a minute, right?
Yeah.
About the things absolutely. That happened. I think some of my favorite moments before the con and stuff started, because I got there like Wednesday night and everything, was on Thursday when we started unpacking and stuff, just kind of like hanging out for a while. You know, we live in the old days of just us doing things together and projecting. So it's nice kind of hanging out for you for a couple hours, even though the rest of the event, we didn't really get to see each other outside of like judging and like coming by and like every once in a while we talked to each other.
Yeah, up until Sunday night, I feel like you and I didn't actually see each other that much.
Yeah, I think we actually would check in like every couple hours and like hand things off responsibilities and like split for multiple hours and come back again. Yeah. And that was just our lives for multiple days in a row.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Well, let's talk about the LCQ, right? So it was a little bit smaller than last year, but there was more people playing in the side events. So we actually had more people playing MCP on Friday than we did last year, even though the LCQ was actually a little bit smaller. But we still ended up bringing in, I think, 11 people out of it, which like going into the event, we thought it could be as small as four, but still had some drops, still got it all done in five rounds. But it's really interesting seeing the kind of mixture of emotions, right? You lose round one, like say Boots, right? But then kind of rallies, stays into it, goes 4-1. And we did something interesting, which was funny because PCN and I were on the same page. I walked up to them and I was like, how would you guys feel about streaming a 3-1 match where they're kind of playing for the chance to get in, as opposed to, I think two out of four of the people that were undefeated were already, had already been streamed. And then it was like, well, there's this Midnight Suns Foes matchup where they're playing for the they're playing for a qualifier spot. And I still am really excited to go back and watch that game. So huge shout out to Boots, who, you know, has really been trying to up his game and then, you know, rallied himself, which I've been there. I remember some of my first War Machine tournaments where I would lose round one. I'm like, fuck. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm not losing another game. And I would just like always go X and one. And then I'm like, all right, now I just have to not lose round one and I'll be fine.
Yeah. Always proud for your boy. Like, losing round one is hard. It's like you travel over there, you get all psyched up, and like first round you have a hard match and you're like, oh no. Right. But X and ones get in, and it's about setting expectations for yourself. Yeah. Right. Like, there's only one winner and there's lots of players. So you got to understand where you're at and what your goals are. And as long as you're making progress personally and you're winning more than you're losing, like my personal goals at tournaments are I have a positive kill death ratio, right? Well, more wins than I have losses. That's literally the only goal in a tournament. Because as long as you're doing that, you're continuously improving.
Indeed, indeed. So last year you went 3-3. Is that right?
Yes, I went 3-3.
So you were able to improve that. You're 4-2, yeah. Danny, now.
I went 4-2 this year.
And you were doing it with A-Force.
Yes, the spicy, spicy A-Force. I went all the way through. For a while, I waffled. I literally did. I brought webs with me. And at the last minute, I was like, why would I do this? Why would I switch to the last minute and betray my own feelings here? And went all in of A-Force. I even took out Miles from my lists and went all in just A-Force and managed to pull it through.
Well, and you were top A-Force as well.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I have a lot of respect for A-Force and for She-Hulk. I wish she had, you know, just some other ability. Like, I personally want a damage reduction, like a pay-for damage reduction. Yeah. So, like, she's draining a bunch of her power, keeping herself from doing damage, but it's causing it harder and harder to kill her, but she can't do it forever, essentially.
Yeah, it's really weird when you're playing She-Hulk and people are attacking you, and you just, like, you hit that 10 power pretty quickly, and you have nothing to spend it on defensively.
Yeah, like, zero.
Right?
Like, one game, I had her die round two. I took, like, 5 damage, 6 damage, 5 damage, 4 damage, dead. I was like, cool. This game is going to go poorly for me now. And sort of, like, sacrifices and trying to bodyguard, like, she just, I couldn't block, and she's just taking huge hits. And, like, you feel that with a Hulk. And with Big Hulk, when he's getting angry, his damage output's going up. And so you're like, yay, right? This isn't so bad. I get one more activation where I just like fill the cap and go crazy. With her, it's like, oh, no, I ran out of things to do.
Do you have a favorite game of the weekend?
My absolute favorite game was the last game because it was actually completely crazy. So I'm playing against it is Brandon Abramson. This dude was such a good player. The game ends. The reason why this game is insane is that we go to round 7, 21-20, which I'd never done before. And we're playing on Extremis and Legacy Virus, right? And it's 18 threats. And I'm looking at this and seeing Extremis going like, I have to run around, right? Like, there's no option on Ds. If I don't have some ability to move around my pieces, he's just going to outrun me and end the game. And I'm glad I thought of that. So I ended up going like Zemo, Crystal, Black Cat, Okoye, and She-Hulk.
Okay.
Just super wide threes that are fast, a special delivery so I can move She-Hulk around, and then Okoye just to like help defend people and keep things around because her double move can move her between points, but you kind of be a little careful where she ends up, right? And then his is Black Panther, M'Baku. He's playing Amazing Spider-Man, his Okoye. And I think there's like one more piece in there that I'm forgetting right now. Bill. He's playing Beta Ray Bill. Gotcha. Which is a super strong team.
Yeah.
Right? Like absolutely strong team. Like,
yeah,
beefy boys.
A few
right?
rock stars in there, for sure.
And what ends up happening is that we're kind of staying neck and neck in points. And positionally, what's happening is we're rotating in a circle around each other, right? His ASM comes up. I'm chasing lazy viruses or whatnot. And I'm able to get the drop on M'Baku early with special delivery and just like pound him out. like round two, and she's like, Crystal just explodes on him. And she's like, oh, two energy defense? Okay, I'll just two shot. He just dies, like just explodes the Crystal. I'm like, okay, sure, we'll go with that. And so in doing so, I then round three position and move off special delivery into ASM to try to get the extra MS off of him, the Legacy Virus off of him that he tried to run away with earlier.
Okay.
Well, in doing so, M'Baku then punishes me for the rest of the game by doing his spenders and repositioning and throwing stuff and catching up to me. And so what I realized very quickly is that I'm losing the game. It's like round three, I'm starting to lose position. And the only way to make this game keep going is that I need to stop him from scoring. So this is where Crystal comes in to save the day, because Crystal's push on her range four gun.
Right, yeah, she's basically got impact webbing.
Yep. And so she saves the game by becoming an impact webbing machine and walking around and shooting people off points.
Ooh, nice.
To slow the scoring down for me to catch up on the damage race and spread out. And what ends up happening is that his build gets damaged, starts running away, and he runs off of points, but he runs off so far that he's out of the picture for a round. I know the only he can do next round is run back. So I'm like, cool, I'm ignoring Bill now, and I'm going to reposition and take out the rest of your pieces. And because I push his toys off of the extremis, he's now scoring, is not catching up, and he needs to come back because I'm catching up on secures. Right? He only has two legacy viruses. I have one, sure, but I'm now controlling all the secures, and he's not scoring, and he's scoring like two, and I'm scoring like four. And he's like, uh-oh, he's in problem, right? And so he's not having to run back into the scenario. And the way the game ends up is that Black Cat, this whole game, had just been chasing people and staggering and keeping his pieces from being able to double run. She finally gets to the point, I'm like, okay, cool, it's her turn, where she grappling hooks, walks, steals off Bill, takes the virus. I score the 1 point to go to 21-20 in the game. Because the whole goal was, as long as I keep the game tied, at some point I can steal Black Cat. And that's when I end the game. So I just did an engineer scenario where he can't score more than me, and then I end by stealing, and the game's over.
That Black Cat, you know, over-nerfed, and now she's not any good, and you're representing for these undervalued characters.
And I think that was my important lesson. Yeah. My important lesson for that game is that it's not always about scoring as many points as possible. It's also about denying points at opportune times and keeping your opponent positionally where they can't recover. They're forced in a decision of maybe a move and attack, or they have to double move or stand in secure point. And you're like, cool, all my resources here, your one resource is over there. I'm just going to keep pounding you because you can't counteract me fast enough for me to just daze this character.
Man, there were some not so close games, like Adam's last game, which goes to like 24-23, and they had less than like 15 seconds left between their two clocks.
Yeah, like just absolute madness, right? And multiple games went multiple rounds. Like Carl's first game went to like round 8, right? Like just madness, right? Like just full madness in LCQ.
Yeah, so one of the things I did get a lot of questions, because we do have tiebreaker rules, but those are not for, oh, you've gotten to the end of round 6 and you're tied. You would keep playing. Our tiebreaker rules for the Invitational are just in the case of a situation where it's like infinity hammers and you have two characters on one side of the board with, you know, a hammer each, and you're controlling two secures, and then they're on the other side of the board and nobody can cross over. And if you try to cross over, you just lose, so that both sides would just sit there kind of endlessly. And so we have tiebreaker rules that's just for fixing that situation, so we don't have a tie in the bracket. But you would still, if you're at end of round 7 and the score is tied and there's still things to happen, right? I mean, sometimes it's just keep going until Black Cat has enough, you know, power to walk and hop and steal, or stuff like that, right? You know, if at some point some character can get enough power to kind of reposition and be in the right spot to make some sort of impact. But
yeah, you basically just want to try to guarantee that you get the extra point and they don't get the extra point.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of those are the really interesting games where things are, you know, you're like, well, we could actually tie. Do either of us have a way out of this puzzle? Is there a means? And that's why we kind of wanted the tiebreakers up, though, so someone could recognize, like, oh, if the tiebreaker is, you know, VP's, you know, threat level of characters on the board, you know, oh, well, that person has fucking Thanos and blah, blah, blah. So their characters are, you know, much more valuable. So I have to do something to kind of swing this back. But What about from other games? Was there anything that you saw that you just thought was super awesome?
My second loss was against Brian Freddy.
Yeah.
I think he's part of the H House Party Protocol bros and like the whole crew. And he's playing Black Bolt, right? He's playing the full Inhumans, but no CGR, right?
Like a hero.
He's playing Black Bolt with like Quicksilver, like the cool pieces, right? Where in our matches, Infinity and Hammers, he juices up Quicksilver. Like, I grab my hammer. He juices up Quicksilver. No, sorry. He grabs his hammer. He juices up Quicksilver. I grab a side hammer. He's then next round gives the power to Quicksilver to speedster up, walk, grab my hammer, and walk and grab my hammer. I'm like, uh-oh. Fighting Quicksilver doesn't usually go well. Because then he starts running away and is backstepping, right? And like, oh, this is not good. And so I had a kind of a decision point of, do I special delivery to try to get him? Or do I special delivery in to try to move to the point? I decided to move in towards the scenario. And Quicksilver just spent the rest of the game seesawing between points and punching people and keep me from
doing Quicksilver.
That guy's so annoying. Yeah, just being Quicksilver. And I forgot how cool that guy was.
yeah, like
playing Brotherhood. I played a ton of that guy. And he's so annoying when he just doesn't die. He's like, oh, I have spider reflexes. He's like, I'm fast. He's like, I climb walls. Like, oh, yeah, you do climb walls. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Sometimes Quicksilver is just fucking invulnerable. And you're just like, this guy will not die. And then other times he just gets one shot. And it's.
Yeah, there's no way to know. Yeah. The guy's insane. But that match, I learned a lot of respect for Black Bolt Spender. Just like the master punch, being able to throw size 4.
Yeah, because like that one went down by 1 cost, I believe. And it's a really solid. Costs. Yeah, I think it used to be 4. But yeah, it's, you know, gives him a place. It's one of the few ways that he has action economy.
Yeah.
It's solid. And especially, it's a lot easier for him to use it now with his exchange.
Yeah, an interaction that I just didn't think about is that he shot me with the gun. So Shiho, I get by the guard. I'm like, okay, I'll aggressive up for my next activation. He spenders, punches me, throws me, is placing, throwing me. Now he's on my point and I'm displaced off my point. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, well, yeah. That is not the way I wanted that to go.
It's like, yeah, I shouldn't have walked into that. I was like, didn't even know you get placed off that. I was like, yeah, So, like, that was interesting to find out. Black Bolt's sick. No, he's a good guy now.
I did get to see probably the greatest beam that I have ever seen in my entire life, which was John Paul George, who was in the finals. He was playing a game, and it was against Avengers, and he web swings forward with Agent Venom and then beams over injured Captain America, injured Zemo, and Hulk and Heimdall. I think OG Cap had like 3 damage on him, but it was just nuts. It was just KO Cap, get the trigger, deal the 1 damage to each of the other characters. Then KO Zemo, deal 1 damage to the other 2 characters. And then it was then KO's Heimdall, or not KO's, but Daze's Heimdall, does 1 more damage to Thor. And so now Thor's already taken the 3 damage, and so now he's got, 4 left or something. And then with the winging it, is also able to Daze Thor. It was just like, holy shit. Because I think it was a researcher game, if I recall.
It's like Christmas Miracle Beam, right? Like you get everything you ever wanted in life.
Yeah, and a lot of those attacks killed, like, to the point. But yeah, I would say John Paul's dice were only maybe a little bit above average, maybe 10, 15%, 20% at most. But his opponent's dice were like when Cap rolls 6 dice and he's counting blanks and he blocks 1, that's sad times.
Feels bad.
But his list was kind of set up where he had the Zemo rerolls and Heimdall rerolls, but you don't get to use any of them against Agent Venom.
Nope.
So that was kind of a nutso crazy moment. We're like living the dream, so to speak. Sometimes Agent Venom, he's not that difficult to kill, but when he just gets to do work, he's nuts.
He is a very efficient killer. Being able to place himself, you can't modify. He can throw. He can shoot twice. Like, yeah. He's fine.
And oh, yeah, that was one action. He ended up just walking back to his secure afterwards, like, I have run out of targets to kill.
Yeah, he's like, I'm bored. Bye. Yeah. Just walks away.
I guess I'll just come over here and score this shit.
Oh, that sounds like him.
But, yeah, let's talk about the top eight going in, like the undefeated day two. How close? So the breakdown was three Guardians, one Defenders, one X-Force, one Wakanda, one Brotherhood that was Mystique only, and what was the other one?
There's a Hellfire.
Oh yeah, and Hellfire. So that was not too far off from what I was expecting. My pick would have been three Guardians, and I would have had X-Force in there, and I would have had Hellfire in there. But the Wakanda Defenders and Mystique Brotherhood, I thought, were really interesting choices, and those players were doing very well.
Yeah, those are fun lists. I've been seeing the surgence of Hellfire and the talk about it over the past couple months. So I kind of figured they'd have a presence. They had a much stronger presence than I thought they would overall, like the overall seed. But like, they have a lot of strong lists. And I'm glad Emma, people have gone full circle on Emma from being Emma's bad to actually Hellfire's good.
Yeah, yeah, Hellfire is strong. And so there was a point where PCN and I were talking where there was the chance that DeLuca and Hyper Viper could have a rematch in the semis. They were both in the top eight and they were in the same bracket. So if they both won, there could be a Fletcher and DeLuca, which was the finals of 2022. Yeah, 2022.
Yes.
So that would have been kind of cool. It didn't happen, but that would have been kind of a cool streaming moment. But Hyper was playing really well.
Yeah, that Hellfire list he's playing is super mean. I played against it a couple times. Like, it is rough going if you don't know what's going on. Hellfire, like, that leadership is just so nuts.
Yeah, it was close. Like, the game that he got knocked out, I felt like really could have gone either way. But he just came out slightly behind in that one. So
yeah, I mean, poor Miles, right? Rep your boy.
Yeah. Sometimes Miles just goes down. I mean, Jugs can be a Miles murderer for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I've had games like where Zemo like gets punched once by Jugs and just gets blown up. Like, just one shot. Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
why not? Seven hit damage. Yeah, why not? See what happens.
But I would say probably my favorite list of the top eight was probably Dustin Janipour's Mystique Brotherhood list. I thought his list was absolute fire. I was like, holy crap, this is a really good list.
Yeah. I met Dustin last year at LVO. And so it's like a full circle thing here, right? He was actually a friend of ours, right?
Yeah.
A friend of a friend of ours, I should say. And seeing him go from, you know, where he was last year positionally to now is like a huge jump, right? Because he had a very real shot at making the finals. His match was a sweaty match.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I just really liked his roster. And even though it wasn't quite on my radar, like, that was not going to be one of my predictions, I ended up really liking it. I mean, I also liked Eric's Defenders list. Again, that was not on my radar, but a pure Defenders did really, really well. I would have streamed that one, but he just has a preference to not be streamed unless it's the finals. I've liked his list every year. I wanted to stream him last year. I think he was playing Wakanda, and I thought he had a cool list then. He might be one of the guys that I just consistently like his lists the most.
He was the Wakanda list last year, right?
Yeah, he was the Wakanda.
He's like the Hulk Wakanda. Yeah. We were both playing Wakanda. He beat me for it. I was very sad.
Yeah, he was Wakanda top eight last year. Yeah. And I remember trying to track him down and being like, hey, can I stream you? But totally respect. I mean, being on stream adds an extra level of, stress for some people. And if I can avoid that for people, I absolutely will. But shout out to our boy, Alec, goes 5-1 with X-Force. And
your boys,
yeah, our teammate. I will say probably one of the moments that I felt the worst was during his streamed game where he's already losing and I have to be like, hey guys, your opponent, like, you still need to activate Hulk. Like, it was such a bad round already.
Yeah.
And they were just like wrapping it up. And it already looked like Alec was probably losing the game, but I was like, we still need to activate Hulk. And they're like, shit, yeah. Yes. As bad as this round went, there's still a Hulk to activate. So yeah, that spiraled out of control. One of the things I noticed across games is I feel like tactics card selection is maybe one of the things that, like, of all the games that I sat watching, I noticed a lot of the time the winner would have all five tactics cards used, and then the person who lost would be in a spot where they had two or three tactics cards go unused and maybe even become unusable. Right, even in the finals, John Paul George still had Sacrifice and Brace. And even though Sacrifice is a really good card, I think in that matchup with all that displacement, right, between Hulk and CGR, maybe Sacrifice is just not good enough to make the cut, you know?
In my Extremis matchup, I didn't run Sacrifice, even though I normally run Sacrifice.
Yeah.
Because you just know by the shape of it, there's not going to be as many opportunities to get that card off. And because there's so few, the opportunity cost is so low that you're not going to use it. It's better to have something you'll get some use out of than something you'll get no use out of.
Yeah. And so that's, if I had one big takeaway to share with kind of all the players of the community watching and judging games, is I feel like tactics card selection is maybe the thing that I felt like it was having the largest impact. When you see players of this caliber playing at their best, playing their best game, playing their best lists, in the game, I didn't actually see that many games where I felt like, oh man, this game was just totally decided by dice. And I felt like people were deploying really well, clock management really well. The main thing is I felt like some people were picking tactics cards for the matchups better than others. And so that would be, if I had to pick something that I would say kind of mattered the most, which I think sometimes is a thing that gets, I don't know, maybe gets neglected a little bit.
Yeah. I think it's easy to fall into like a set of cards, like a default set of cards, and get really into a rhythm of using them and getting used to how they work.
Yeah.
And then not considering the scenario that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And that you're going to make micro changes based on like certain facts, like you're going to work against a particular matchup. Like Webs on a D is different than playing Cabal on a D, right? Like they don't work the same way. And so you might pick different cards based on that fact.
Yeah, I've definitely had some games where I autopiloted too much and picked specific tactics cards because they're what I normally go with. And then in the moment I was in the game, I was like, man, I picked the totally wrong. Like there's at least two or three of these that I need to change. All right. Well,
it's always interesting.
Let's talk about the finals a little bit, right? We did end up with a Guardians on Guardians final. So the internet was overjoyed. It was all the hopes and dreams came true. Then on top of it, it was also a researcher game and it was 15 threat and they played the exact same lists.
You love to see it.
I did like that Gregory's stuff was painted very differently, kind of off meta colors. And so I felt like it really kind of stood out on the table. And it was kind of easy to tell who was who's Star-Lord and that sort of thing. But I was at least like, as much as for a mirror match, right, I felt like it wasn't just murder slot machine. There's easily can be games where you're just like, oh, one side rolled better. And in that matchup, I think they both wanted to go second, but so John Paul gets to go second, which means he's going to be the first one who gets to unload and start setting the tone of the game. But John Paul rolled bad on the CGR roll. And so he wasn't going to have as good of an opener. So again, and it was kind of like that the whole game where they both would leave characters at one that like totally keeps the game in a different mode. And it was really impressive. And then there was a turn where CGR just doesn't move. And it was the right play. I mean, I would have maybe considered moving him like an inch or two. But in general, the kind of decision about roughly where CGR was the right call. And he put a clock on Gregory and was like, you've got to deal with me before the game ends.
Yeah. You want, even if it doesn't necessarily push the game to end, forcing more mental load on your opponents that they're down one or that they're the ones who have to like make the action here is now they have to think about why you're goading them into an attack. And they're going to start second guessing why they're going down this particular line of logic and making them waste time and clock and everything. And this is all to show you that the more mental load and more things you're cognitively thinking about, the harder it is to make decisions, right? And to go through the process of making decisions. And so being on your back foot, for the shorthand of that conversation, puts you on edge, right? And that can lead to poor decision-making. Not that that happened to Greg in that situation, but it can lead to poor decision-making.
Yeah, I thought in general, I think it would have been very easy in that moment for some people who just want to just like roll dice and like put their faith in the dice, where easily in John Paul's situation, someone else might have gone, well, I'm going to try to kill their Ghost Rider, right? And that would have been the absolute wrong play. Even though John Paul did not come out ahead, I think his decision to wait back there and put the, you know, kind of force Gregory to come in and expose himself more, then even though it didn't work out in John Paul's favor, it was still the absolute right play. And it, you know, he still was able to, you know, go in on Ghost Rider and just fell one die, you know, one damage short. But that would have been really interesting to see is if he gets that other damage, right? He just needed to the six dice attack versus the defense roll ended up being 3-3. And so he lives on one. But it would have been really interesting to see if Star-Lord just kills him afterwards. Could you imagine like that game where it's like there are no CGRs left on the board and it's just one Star-Lord hanging out at the end being like, I'm the boss, yo.
I mean, he was plucky.
Yeah.
Manages to live. He jumped out the window, right? Didn't die.
Yeah. But yeah, it was still, despite it being a mirror and being the exact same characters, I thought it was still a really interesting game. I thought they played really methodically. I'm looking forward to rewatching it.
Mirror matches are extremely interesting, especially full mirror matches, right? Where models and stuff line up because you know exactly each other's threat ranges. And it is very much a positioning game. Like, yes, it's dice, it is randomness stuff, but you can account for everything that they can do because you can do the same exact thing. And it's about knowing which toys can apply pressure at the right time. Then you add randomness and dice and everything to it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Fair. But yeah, I was really happy with all how obviously the Invitational gets the most kind of attention, but the affiliation battle fired off nicely. We had at least two scrambles go every day. Team event was 16 teams again, which is great. Yeah. We had the Timelines event actually go. There was 11 people for that. Then I think we had about 27 for gymnastics. So I think we finally kind of hit the right mixture of events that kind of covers what a little bit of what everybody wants to try. I really enjoyed.
I feel like,
oh, go ahead.
I feel like we had like one, the big event, the LCQ and everything. We basically had a bunch of mini tournaments, like the size of like most like groups would get like in their local regional area and stuff, like a 16 person, 30 person event. And we're running those concurrently with the major event stuff. So I was like, cool to be able to do that this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's been a little bit of an art kind of trying to figure out what are the right events, which days are the right days to do them on. And I think now we kind of finally settled into it. There's going to be some small timing adjustments. I wanted the LCQ to start 1 hour early, but in talking with Tyson, he had started editing the wrong doc after our chat about times. And so then when he switched over and started editing the correct document, it just never quite, that was the thing that never quite got over. And so I think what we're going to do in the following year is, because in reality, based on when people arrive and when people are getting back to me, I kind of still want the LCQ to kind of wrap at 8. And then that's kind of when list lock. I don't really want to push list lock forward an hour because there's still people getting in. There's flight delays. And so that probably means we are going to start the LCQ an hour early, but we probably will give the LCQ a lunch break, probably after two rounds, because it'll go like 9 to 11, and then 11 to 1, and then a lunch break,
yeah,
and then 2, 4, and 6. So there'll be a little stuff like that. I don't think we needed as big of a window between the scramble start times. We had them going at like 11, 1, and 3. And I think it's probably better if we schedule those to start at like 11, noon, and 1.
Yeah. I do think a definite improvement was having set times for scramblers.
Yes.
Instead of just like, hey, when they reach up. I think that was easier for people to sort of coordinate and understand, instead of people sort of coming up, asking a question, and then leaving and coming back like, oh, wait, we need you to come back to start the scrambler. Don't leave.
Yeah, no, it worked. It worked a lot better that way. And I think it made it a lot easier for people to know when to come, because otherwise you don't want to show up super early and then be waiting for everyone else. And you also don't want to show up late. So it was really awkward for like when people should come for the scrambles. But yeah, having scheduled start times, I think, worked really well. And there was a lot of interest in those kind of across the board. So overall, just a blast. I really liked the mixture of mats that we got this year. Frontline Gaming give us like such a cool mixture of them. Like, I really dig the Mars mats and the kind of dark steel base. Like, it was just cool to have a few other options in there. Did you left with a mat, right?
I left with a mat. I got the loading dock one, the landing zone, the spaceport one. I like getting different kinds, because then different like terrain looks on it differently, and actually like goes through in the future, and you know, have a little spice in your life, and not just everything in New York Metro somehow.
Yeah. All right. Well, what did you think about the after party? You know, you and I have done Warfare Weekend and stuff before. We've been to the cons. Like, we were partying in Denmark till all hours. The having the really cool hangs with other people in the community is a big deal to you and I. And this, for me at least, was the best LVO hang that I've been able to have.
Yeah. We weren't able to join till a little later. It was closer to 8 or so when we actually caught up everyone. But we stayed till what, past 1?
Yeah, right, hanging out. I did not get back to my room until like 3.
Yeah, so we're hanging out. It was good to just talk with people in a more relaxed environment, because like during the event, you maybe get like 10, 15 minutes before someone needs you to do something, right? Or you're moving around and doing another activity. So you don't get to like have an in-depth conversation.
Yeah, it's funny how I was telling Tyson, when we were getting ready for the first year, I felt like he and I were both doing a lot of work, because there was a lot of like establishing the format and timings, and there was a lot of things to do. And then the next year, I felt like it was significantly less. And then this year, outside of like preparing the Red Skull ruling, I felt like it was almost all him. And so I was kind of expecting that I was not going to have quite as busy of an LVO, and that did not end up being the case. This ended up being my busiest LVO, and I was beat. Monday, I took like a 5-hour nap in the middle of the day. Just like, I just did not have a lot of energy, but it was cool. I did get to go have nachos in the morning, because you did not stay for Nacho Monday like you did last year. So I did Nacho Monday with the Arizona crew.
Yeah. But to step back, the after party was a lot of fun. It was great to hang out with people. I love the environment. So it's like, to your point, going to WC compared to here, like the biggest difference between like a European event and an American event is like after a social event. It's like everyone hangs out afterward and is much more like, and just hanging out, having beers till like pretty late in the night and traveling off when they want to, right? So it's cool to just have that, and for people to experience and come in and out, right? And having it last a long time means people can flow in and out as they're getting ready to go, right?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely going to become a regular fixture of our LVO experience, because it's also like, once everything's packed up, it's like the first time I get to really actually chill.
So I will always support this, because when I love party, right?
Yes. It was like one of the only times that you and I got to actually hang out too.
Yeah.
But it was a good mixture of people. We did have like a couple of like the War Machine TOs and stuff hang out. We had a little bit of the LVO staff come and hang out. We did have some of the painters and stuff in the community come hang out. So there was a few, there was definitely some new people that I got to meet through all of that. So yeah, I was, that was one of my biggest questions going into this event, is how is it gonna kind of just all unfold. And I was pretty happy with it. We can definitely improve on it, but it was a good first run for that.
Yeah, everything's a learning experience, right? Yeah. And as long as we can improve and grow from it, we'll be successful.
Yeah, it was great. I definitely want to have more ice next year. I think it was a little hard for people to make mixed drinks and like have a little, you know, have a little ice in their whiskey or rum and coke or, you know, all that kind of stuff. So there's some little things that we can improve. I think we definitely add a few more bags of ice into that. And we like didn't have ciders, which I think would have been a really nice mixture in the beer selection. But overall, it was just a blast. Did you have anything that you kind of wish that you didn't have to miss out on? Was there any like, oh, you wish you could have done the team event, or was there anything where you're just like, ah, oh, that's your one regret, is that you didn't get to do X?
I would like to do the team event, but the problem is I have like a personal thing where I don't like to drop from events. I will drop events, but I don't like dropping from like the invitational and stuff, because I want to see how I rank against players who sort of met a certain caliber, yeah, I guess. Exactly. I want to see where I personally rank against that. Yeah, right. Yeah. And it's not about anything else, right?
Yeah. And you wanna see how you're doing, and
yeah.
Man, and you were a rock star with a
person, right? Yeah. So there's that, like the personal thing, but I love team events also, right? Yeah. So I have like this like conundrum that I'm dealing with of like, which do I want to do more? That. And it's like, but I felt like I wanted to prove that A4s had a solid shot, can have a solid record, and it comes down to your list planning and doing things, and that it can work. Was more important to me than playing a team tournament. I was like, no, I'm going to make this shit work. Let's do this.
Well, and you were 1-2, right, at the end of day one, and then you won 3 games in a row on Sunday. Great. And you're just like, boom. That's a big difference. And I think that is a message that I would give to a lot of players. Because if you come out to something like this, and then you go 1-2 and then you drop, that's going to be where you feel like that's where your feeling is going to be at the end of the con. But it's such a big difference if you stay in and then you end up going 4-2. Like that's a totally different feeling. And like no disrespect to anybody who goes 1-2 and then drops for the team event or something. There's people who did that for sure. And totally respect it. But when you're really trying to challenge yourself and you want to see where you stack up and what you need to improve, and that was one of the conversations that Boots and I had, was, you know, he got to learn some hard lessons in games where he had one game where he just picked the wrong team. He had a very subtle character choice, and he felt like he chose the wrong characters, and it kind of left him on the back foot the whole time. Then he got to take that information and go, okay, the onus is on me. I need to do a better job of figuring out what do I need to play for the matchup. I have a very flexible team design. I need to lean into that. And then he was able to use that information and then immediately translate it into more wins after realizing. And so I think there's a big takeaway there. So,
yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, I do want to shout out to the Alfredo's crew, who has gone back to back, winning the team event. They are now the only people who, well, I guess they've always been the only people who have won our team event. But it'll be interesting. Like, can they go 3-0? Will LVO25 also have an Alfredo's team event victor, or will someone rise to the challenge? Will it be Pork Roll Protocol? Will it be, will Gregory have a new sweet Victoria team that comes down? Again, I'm not sure if I actually said it in the episode, but huge shout out to Gregory, who's only been playing MCP for about 6 months, but he had a big War Machine background. He's been a very competitive player, very, you know, very methodical. And when it just comes to people who can think things out, who can strategize, and they're just in the zone for whatever it takes to win minis games events, Gregory has it for sure. And he was able to show that, even though he did end up with one loss in the LCQ, but he qualified in the LCQ and then goes undefeated in a field where a lot of people were planning for what he was playing.
So yeah, I mean,
big shout out to him. I'm going to try to have him on an episode soon. Gregory's also just a really sweet dude.
Yeah, he's a super nice guy. All Along Machine Days, right?
Yeah. He had kind of come on the scene right as I left, but I remember I'd come back and I was playing War Machine in like 2019 and I was watching him in a finals at LVO and I was like, man, this guy's really fucking good. So, but he's a person I might see a little bit more often. I could totally see him coming down to Bellevue stuff. That's not too bad for Victoria.
Yeah, Kane has come down more often, like the old days.
How did you feel overall about the Portland performance? Because Dayton upped his win record as well, right? He went 3-3 last year and now has a 4-2 record. And my money is on him making top 8 next year. I think he's in.
Yeah. I think a lot of the Portland boys dropped. So Bate and I stayed in the longest. I think they switched over to the team tournament is what happened on the second day, which, you know, respect, always fun stuff to do. So I'm actually not sure how they did in team rounds. Look that up now.
And Dayton scored much better than, even though you and Dayton had the same record. So that means that Dayton is definitely the best player in Portland.
Oh, I'll give that title.
Yeah. Is there any rivalry there at all? Like, do you think that next year you guys will be seeing who can lock it in at 5-1 or 6-0?
We play games pretty regularly. We actually played a game just before we even came down stuff at the last tournament. And the last tournament ended, we're playing our matchups with the same matches we play LVO. And the only reason we couldn't finish a match is that 9-8 is because the power went out because of the snowstorm.
Oh, that sucks.
It was like beginning of round 3. His 9 to my 8. And I'm like, okay, we're still winning. We're really close. We go into the round. Power goes out. We're like, I guess we have to call it. Like, I don't like, we're done. Right? Is that where to go from here?
Also, special shout out to Adam for being the first person to ever go 0-6 at the LCQ. Invitational.
Yeah, near unbeatable record at this point. You'd have to have a 7-round event to beat it.
Yeah, so he likes to call himself a trash dolphin, and that's his handle. So I'm seriously considering bugging Tyson and be like, can we make a dolphin jumping out of a trash can and like have the LVO sign in front of it and do an actual trash dolphin for someone who goes 0-6?
Yeah, that becomes like the special award, the secret award, yes. Right? You have to like know about to actually get.
Yeah, and it may not be given out. 0-5 doesn't get it. You have to absolutely scrub out the whole way. And he was trying to win his last game so hard.
You have to earn 0-6, right? Because the only way you get 0-6 is you have to keep going believing that you have a chance of winning. Right? Yes. That's the only way you can go 0-6.
Do you have I know he was complaining, he's like, I do not want to go 0-6 because Danny will never let me hear the end of it. Did you have any good jokes?
Because I went 0-5 at TC, he was like, "That's it's crazy. No one will ever beat that." I was like, So the fact that, 3 months later, he's already beat my record. One, see, he thinks about it. But two, just magnificent. Because he did it in a way that he knows I won't be able to beat in any reasonable way. That's what makes it actually annoying.
See, I said at the beginning that even if you go 0-6 in the Invitational, like getting there is an accomplishment and you're playing against great players. And I feel like he took that as a challenge.
Yeah. He's like, oh, yeah, watch this.
But yeah, I don't think last year we had someone stay in and actually go 0-6. They might have had a bye, though. There might have been a 1-5 that had a bye.
That's even better. You think about to go 0-6, you have to not get a bye.
Yes.
Right? You have to not get advice. You can't have... So the random number generator, right? If you're dropping, has to not hit you.
Yeah, you have to actually stay in such a way where we have the right amount of drops. And that was impressive. I don't think we had... I think we maybe had only like one buy the whole time. We did have the start of Sunday. I think I'm going to have to do some sort of actual registration thing on Sunday because we had 4 people not show up for games. Which is just sad. And I know at least 1 or 2 of them had tried to drop, but they at about 8 o'clock, I had kind of loaded up the pairings on my phone to get ready so I could kind of see where things were going to be at. And I was trying to mess with some things because I was trying to see who was on tables that they had already played on, because the bracket system does, it does priority, like it just puts the top bracket on table one. So there's a little bit of stuff where I was trying to mess with that stuff and see who was on tables that they had already played on, so I could kind of finagle some things to give them a better variety and change up the tables. But people dropping after eight, it didn't necessarily factor in because I already had the pairings loaded. And so I think what I'll have to do for Sunday next year is there will be an actual check-in with me. I will have the list of who's playing, and then I will manually drop people, for those who have not like checked in with me by like 8:30, something
that's unfortunate,
like that.
Right?
And it's just people, if you're trying to keep playing, you want to have a game.
Yeah.
So.
And so, especially when there's like four people who don't get a pony, like, oh, like that's like perfectly.
Well, thankfully, it was both of them just ended up playing each other. So it's like, hey, take game wins, and then you guys just play a game for fun. So they still got in a good game, which was nice. But Danny, is there anything else you want to get into the main episode before we start wrapping up? I know it just feels like there's a gajillion things that we could talk about.
No, not a ton, just because like trying to condense everything down. But I just really want to say I was so happy that everything went pretty smoothly. I appreciate everything that you and Tyson do. Appreciate, you know, Lexa and Rylan. Appreciate Fogel.
Yeah.
Right? Who is helping us?
Yeah.
Right?
Fogel stepped up a lot as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So just, you know, thanks to the crew, you know, and Bell as well, obviously, for helping out and everything. And I appreciate that. And appreciate to all the players, right, that things went from judging point of view, most of the questions were just like incredibly obtuse rules interactions.
Yes.
Like the paranoia question of like, oh, okay, you don't take a damage within two, but that same character. So if character's dazed, you don't take a damage within two. But that same character's dazed in and around, you don't score an extra point. Right.
Yeah.
From the same model. So it's like slightly unintuitive. Certain things happen.
Well, and that one was rough because it was ruled one way originally and then it was unruled like a week later or something. And so that's an easy one for people to miss. There was a couple of rules questions that came over where I came over the table and they're like, oh, this guy attacked me and he did zero damage. Can I use this superpower? And I'm like, the first line of the superpower says, if this character suffered damage.
So no,
you can't use it. But a lot of it was just there was one measurement where there wasn't even anything in the way. There was just this kind of important attack roll, and they were just like, "Am I within range two?" And I totally thought it was in, and then I just did this really slow like nudging of the range two template, and. Somehow I got the template between both of them without touching either of them. And it was like the slimmest, smallest nut hair where somehow I managed to do that and not touch either model at all. I was blown away and I was like, I really thought this was in, but it's out. And there was another beam that I checked for people where we thought three out of four were in. And it was just to check, like, can we get the fourth person? And then so we moved a piece of terrain that wasn't critical placement. And then there was like one character who was kind of jammed between them, who was obviously under the beam. And so it was going to be really easy to mark where that character was. And then we put down the template and it actually ended up being where the guy could only get two people in the beam. Because we thought there was this guy who was kind of right at the edge of it. And then it's like, oh no, that guy's actually not in range four. He is not getting beamed.
Yeah, I think the hardest things to do as a judge, like things that make me nervous, I should say, is when there's like a super tight measurement. Like it's like you can eyeball it. Like from playing War Machine in like tape measuring games, yeah. I can look at it and be like, oh, this is gonna be super tight. I can tell you right now,
yeah.
Right? Before I put a template down, I can tell what's gonna happen here. And trying your best to get an accurate measurement and not nudge a single piece while doing so just can make you like you're like okay. Generally, you don't mess this up, right? But getting the pieces and trying to arrange it in a way that you can get the approximation and trying to do like parallel lines, we don't touch models, cool, this is true, and walking through stuff and going from there, right?
I think it's a lot easier for me as a judge. Like, I get more nervous about it when I'm playing the game because I really don't want to mess it up. But I just my hands are so much steadier when I'm doing it as a judge. It's just like that extra adrenaline's not there. And I'm surprised how good I am at that specific task. And I feel pretty good at it as a judge. But I'm surprised when I'm playing a game. Like, I get those hand jitters, especially around one or like early in the day. Like, I get the jitters in my hand for sure. But
so outside of that, no, just, you know, appreciate everyone.
Yep. It was a fantastic time. It was great. Darth Nader, it was great to finally meet you for like the fourth time. All right, well, Danny, I think I'm gonna close out here and we'll have a little fun stuff in the bonus episode. But as always, thank you for hanging out with me, thank you for recording with me and cuddling me Sunday night while I was so tired.
Yeah, we were both so tired. I couldn't even like get up from the chair for the first hour. My feet hurt so bad.
Yeah, indeed. Well, listeners, I will say that the most LVOP thing that you can do is go 0-6 and create a whole new trophy for LVO. Later, nerds.